My, can I lower this? I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic. And through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship, I've been sober since May 30th, 1982, and that doesn't make me a miracle, it makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And my home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group that I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And if you're new in this room tonight, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always call it God's Magnificent AA, the program that saved my life, and it's going to save yours too if you want to take some real quick actions. And I suggest strongly tonight that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and that you get busy and do what everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 11 years. And people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. I want to thank the committee and Mike for inviting me to come over and share my life with you tonight. This is an honor and a privilege, and it's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, I really do, and I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes, and I do an awful lot of things wrong, but I'll tell you one thing, God damn it, that I love you, make no mistake about that. I want to thank I want to thank Anita for picking me up from the airport today. We had quite a ride over here. We're both alcoholic women. We had a lot to talk about right off the bat, I can tell you. And, you know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes tonight. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I didn't get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, which is just a terrible place to get sober if you want to know the truth. And I wasn't doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand up here tonight. And, you know, thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get me my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has done nothing but totally, completely turn around as a result of it. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. And I talked to him this morning before I left Los Angeles, and he said, well, get over there and get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They have this program already. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And you talk to those new people who are the life and blood of AA, and I believe that as I stand up here tonight, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did the most important thing that I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life tonight, you guys, and it did not used to be that way for me. I can guarantee you that. I come from an alcoholic hell that I cannot even describe. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you that the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know what it is, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can tell you that. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape. It makes me sick to think of it, you know. And I had literally lost everything to get myself in that position, I got to tell you. I lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice, although I didn't really care about that, I want you to know. I'd lost my car. I'd lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And then I lost the one thing that brought me to my knees in this disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession, and that absolutely devastated me, but it did not stop me from drinking, because I have an obsession. I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I will learn to control and enjoy my drinking. And the persistence of that illusion damn near led me right into the gates of death. It did lead me into the gates of insanity, I can tell you, as you will soon figure out from my story. But, you know, it didn't start out with me being like that, I got to tell you guys. I come from a lovely, lovely home, and I want you to know that. My mother wanted you to know it, too, I can guarantee you that. My mother died a couple months ago, very suddenly, became sick very, very unexpectedly, and I had to go back to Nebraska for her funeral and stuff. And you guys, I loved my mom very, very much. And as I stand here tonight, I am so grateful that I was current with my mother. I had made my amends to my mother. We'd had a beautiful relationship the last 10 years of her life. And the best part of all is that she got to see her daughter 10 years sober. And for that tonight, I am very, very grateful. My mom used to always tell me, why do you have to get up there and tell those people all that stuff? They're not going to like you. And I always say, Mom, the rottener you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you. And she said, well, I don't understand that. And I said, well, you don't have to understand it. And she said, and don't tell those people that you're afraid, because they don't like people that are afraid. And I'd always say, Mom, the more afraid you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you. And one more time, she'd say, I don't get it. And why would she get it, you guys? She wasn't an alcoholic, you know. And then she'd always tell me this, and I'd love to hear it. And I'd prod her into it any given opportunity. She'd always end up by saying to me, I'm going to tell you something, young lady. You come from good stock, and we don't air our dirty laundry in public. And I'd always say, Mom, it's not dirty anymore. And she didn't understand that either. My mom was always very, very grateful that her daughter was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, although she knew nothing about it, I got to tell you. You guys, my dad was an alcoholic. My dad died on the streets of Chicago in 1979 from this disease. And I would give anything in the world if my father were alive tonight, because we would have one hell of a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school, and she was homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of crap, and made straight A's and never cracked a book. And I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And for many, many years, she was a model for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, Texas, and just retired here recently. And now she's teaching school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you that as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I love my sister very, very much tonight. And I recently found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot of the Navy in Spain, who just got home from Operation Desert Storm not too long ago, who was in that first attack over there. And I am so grateful that that war is over with. You have no idea. Neither one of these people are alcoholic. I have another sister who's married to the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of one hell of a bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you want to know the truth. They're highly successful people, and they bore the hell out of me, I gotta tell you. I have a couple kids who are 32 and 33 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I am. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. You know, I love my kids very, very much. Please don't get me wrong, but they are indeed a couple of jerks. And my oldest son's an alcoholic, and I know our book says we don't call other people alcoholic, but he's my son, and I'll call him an alcoholic if I want to call him an alcoholic. And he just got picked up for his number 9th drunk driving charge not too long ago, and one more time he's gotten out of it. It never ceases to amaze me the crap that we get away with, and I know I'm the last person in the world that can help that kid. I can just be an example to him and keep my mouth shut, and that's what I try and do. I have another son who's not an alcoholic, and he's not a drug addict or anything like that. He's just goofy is what he is. And I love to tell this story because it shows you precisely how my life goes. I got the strangest phone call from that son of mine about 6 years ago in Los Angeles, and he said, Mom, I'm getting married tomorrow. And I thought, getting married tomorrow? It was a surprise to me that anybody would even have him, if you want to know the truth. And I said, Jeff, why do you call me the day before the wedding and expect me to be back in Nebraska? I said, the Pope's in L.A. I doubt if I can get a flight out of here. And he said, Mom, I don't expect you to come. It's just going to be a tiny little wedding. Don't worry about coming. Well, you know, you don't tell people like me that stuff. I wanted to be there. And I was right about that. I couldn't get a flight out of Los Angeles. The planes were just jammed and stuff. And I was just in a twit, you have no idea. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and this is the kind of loving direction I get from my AA sponsor. He said, well, what the hell are you going to do? Walk? If you can't go, you can't go. Now shut up about it. I don't want to hear another word about it. And I did, and I talked to my mom the day after the wedding, and I said, Mom, how'd the wedding go? And she said, it was very lovely, but who was that little girl with them? And I said, what little girl? And she said, well, apparently Jeff's got a 4-year-old daughter that you don't know anything about, and I suggest you call your son and talk to him about it. And I need to tell you guys that I was more than happy to do that. Make no mistake about that. And I called Nebraska, and I said, Jeff, how'd the wedding go? And he said, well, it was very nice, Mom. And I said, who was that little girl with you guys? And he said, Mom, that's my daughter. And I said, why didn't you tell me that I had a grandbaby? I was so upset with him. Not because I had a grandbaby, because I didn't know about it. And he said, Mom, I was afraid you'd get drunk. And I thought, get drunk? I wouldn't have gotten drunk over that. At least I don't think I would have. And I was on the first thing smoking out of Los Angeles, California, to get home and meet my little granddaughter. And I got to tell you guys that this child is the icing on the cake. She is the apple of my eye. Her name is Brandy, and doesn't that just figure? You know, I know. And she walked up to me at the airport and she said, "Are you my grandma?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am." And she said, "Well, you know, you're my favorite grandma." And see, that's what I want to hear. That's the stuff I strive for. And I said, "Brandy, why do you say that? You don't even know me." And she said, "Because you wear ribbons in your hair and grandmas don't wear ribbons in their hair." And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but I'll take whatever I can get here. And I flew her out to California to give me a cake at my number 7th AA birthday about 3 years ago and 4 years ago. And she flew out from Nebraska by herself. And I thought she'd be terrified to be on that airplane by herself. But I was wrong about that. She got off that plane like she owned it after sitting in the cockpit with a pilot the whole trip. And I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble because this little girl never shuts her mouth for 2 minutes, you guys. And I'm not used to being around little kids and they drive me crazy real quick. And I said, "Brandy, do you ever be quiet? You're giving me a headache." And she said, "Grandma, I have a lot to say. And if you don't like it, take some aspirin." That's what she said to me. I think that we have a prospective member of AA on our hands there. I hope I'm wrong about that. I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 2 years ago in January, and I looked at my second grandchild, a beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife, and I got to tell you guys that tears of gratitude rolled down my cheeks because I should not have been standing there. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska about a year ago in January, and I looked at my third grandbaby, another beautiful baby boy that was born to that alcoholic son of mine and his wife, and one more time the tears were rolling. Things with my family are very, very good today. It is only a direct result of this program, I can assure you, and in my case, it took a long time for it to happen, and in my case, that's a damn good thing, I can tell you. You guys, when I was growing up, I was a disruptive jerk is what I was. Always in trouble, always getting kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious, and I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere, and I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys, but I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one, and I hope it was my last one. But I remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me be anything I wanted to be, and I could do anything I wanted to do. And I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and I honor that. I identify myself as an alcoholic from this podium. I used a lot of drugs, too. I need to make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Lincoln, Nebraska, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there was some marijuana and speed and stuff. And, you know, today if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. I did everything I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a hell of a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it about them, I love it about them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence my whole life. And they continue to be today, I'm sorry to say. I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here tonight. I can just feel it, you know. That's one thing I love about Southern California. It's got so many sick men that I'm just entertained around the clock, 24 hours a day. You know, I'm getting to the age now where silver-haired men are starting to become very attractive to me, which opens up a whole new ball game, I got to tell you. Those young ones are nice, but I'll tell you what, girls, sooner or later you got to talk to them, and they ain't got nothing to say I want to hear, I got to tell you. I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. Don't most alcoholic women? I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell out of you and all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 years old, and I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quick found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis, and used to come home and beat the hell out of me on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would ever hit my mom, she would have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And And I grew to hate this guy very, very much, and I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And somebody in that family had to get a job, and I hadn't even finished junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Nebraska. And for the first time in my life, I began to respect and admire something, and it's called nursing. And I had that respect and admiration today, too, by the way. And, you know, little by little, day by day, I was falling in love with the medical profession. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I would love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you tonight, Miss Podium, that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes, but when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 4 years, and I worked full-time for 4 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink. I did not use any drugs during that period of time. And at the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand up here tonight and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, and you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with under ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you tonight is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism, I guess. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And let me tell you, I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. I don't know anything about social drinking. I drank, I ran around with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in an operating room there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in surgery. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. And I drank and I ran around with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you that the incidence of alcoholism amongst the medical profession is tremendously high. And that would do a lot for your security level if you're going to have surgery next week. But it happens to be very, very true. And I grew to love these people very, very much. And they're so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in a general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about what my drinking was like. You know, before I get on with this, I want to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about a year ago talking, and you know, people come up to you afterwards and thank you and stuff. And this woman walked up to me, and she says to me, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding. She meant every word of it. And it was all I could do not to reach out and choke this woman, let me tell you. And I told her, I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you. And furthermore, if I'd wanted you to sponsor me, I'd go to Nashville, Tennessee and asked you, you know. I hear some women get up this podium, you guys, and I wonder if they ever drank. I really do. I wonder if they didn't do all their drinking in one room and somebody didn't shoot it to them through the keyhole. You know, I was out there big time, and I got myself into a lot of trouble, and I need to share that freely with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And besides that, my book tells me that cling to the thought that in God's hands, my dark past is the greatest treasure that I possess. And I found that to be very, very true in my sobriety. And I feel sorry for that woman. I really do. You know, that's the end of that. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is don't come up to me afterwards tonight and tell me I'm disgusting, okay? We have a little town in Nebraska, and it's called Palmyra, Nebraska, and it's a town of about 200 people. And I found out something very interesting about Palmyra, Nebraska one particular night, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I found that out. I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm not supposed to be doing. And I've been to horse races in Omaha, Nebraska with a couple of nurses that I worked with. And the girls told me, they said, "Karen, the horse races have been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln." And I said, "Well, run along." I met 2 guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys wanted to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, nor the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska in February, walking stark naked down the highway in my high heels carrying my purse. And it's a tad bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that, I got to tell you. Tonight I know why ducks' feathers freeze, I can tell you that. And And I remember thinking to myself, what am I going to do? Well, what do? You walk is what you do. And of all the luck, the first person I ran into was a state pig. And, you know, in Nebraska, the cops travel by themselves. They don't have a partner. And out here in California, they're a little bit smarter than that. And this guy stopped his squad car, and he rolled down his window. He turned on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. And he said, lady, you get in this squad car and you sit down and don't you touch me. And, you know, one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop and I said, I'm not getting in your squad car because you might try and rape me. And he said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm here to tell you guys that that made me madder than anything that was going on to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out from the Palmyra, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I'll guarantee you. They were very busy that night at that downtown jail. They did not have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown, booked in that cop's raincoat. You know how cops keep raincoats in the trunks of their car for these occasions. And I went downtown, booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking in his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him. All the delightful little antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, who did not know I was in that courtroom, came up to me and he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law and I was to say this to many, many people in many, many courtrooms in my drinking career. I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody. You know. And we all know better than that. But that's honest to God the way I thought. You know, if you're going to drink, these things are going to happen occasionally, so what? You know. And that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that, and I just shirked it off like it was no big deal. I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital I worked at. And one more time, I've been to horse races. You know, for a number of years, I thought the horse races were my problem. It certainly was not my drinking. And I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth when I drink, and I have a big mouth in sobriety. But I can tell you the pain as a teacher here is getting a lot better. And I've smarted off some guy at that horse race track, and he belted me right in the teeth is what he did. And a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget what this doctor said to me as long as I live. I'll never forget this. He said, Karen, you are such a good nurse and stuff. What is wrong with you? We think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here. And you guys, I could not believe the audacity this man had that he would say that to me. And I said, just fix my lip and get the hell out of my face. I'll drink if I want to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges and the bad checks and all the stuff that we eventually do were starting to happen to me. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought to myself, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. And besides that, I need to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again. And I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand up here tonight. And, you know, if anybody in this room's thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is, it's like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. And I'm sure he feels the same way I do. As a matter of fact, I know he does. And I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And like I said, I'm not proud of that. And I love to tell you this story I'm about ready to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I always say, okay, Clancy, I won't tell it anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell it. Let those people see how sick you really were and how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick and I still think it's funny and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'm going to kill you the next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night, this particular night for some reason. I'll never know why because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. I will say that when the shoe's on the other foot, though, it's fine with me. And this guy came home and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. Make no mistake about that. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, with his eyes pried open, as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I got to tell you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse, you know. But anyway, I remember thinking to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And then I committed the cardinal sin that none of us should ever commit. I started thinking, and we should never drink and think at the same time, I got to tell you. One or the other, but not both going at the same time. And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. This is about 18 years ago, you guys, and Super Glue first came out. And I get so excited, Mike, when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again, you know. But I knew this stuff worked very, very well because my kids were nailing in a house that wasn't moving. And I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went over to this guy, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place in this man that did not have super glue. And I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke, that's what you get for hitting people, you know. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can tell you that. And we had a telephone by our bedroom there, in our bedroom there in Lincoln, and he called the police, and the cops were out in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind, they don't see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which led me to believe the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I stood there and I said, what about my arm that he broke? It was always me, me, me. It was never about anything I did to anybody else. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you can't arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add. And it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off. And they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper written about that at Creighton. And if anybody in this room's thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to. You know, I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I'm getting the hell out of this marriage because when this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut, and he would have too, I got to tell you. God only knows I couldn't have that happen, you know. And I divorced that man one more time. And I will tell you guys on the brighter side of things here tonight that Alcoholics Anonymous really does work because we have an amends step in this program. And my sponsor made me get on the airplane and fly to Sacramento, California and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives with his new wife and stuff. And I tried to tell Clancy, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't give a damn whether you're sorry or not. Get on that airplane and do what I'm telling you to do. And maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room tonight that that guy kind of backs up when he sees me, I gotta tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends there. And I can tell you guys that I walked away from that man. I was free of what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I can tell you that the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started coming true in my life when I made those amends. So I know that this thing works. You just got to do it for it to work. At this time in my life, I got involved with the most bizarre man I had ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was starting to take Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. And it was beginning to be no more fun to be doing it, I got to tell you guys. You know, I love the bars, and I love the men. I love the sex. I love the music. I love all the crap that goes on in there. I fit in there like a glove. And I particularly like what goes on after the bars close, if you want to know the truth. And drinking for me at one time was a fun, fun thing. It would be a lie for me to stand for tonight and say anything but that. But it turned into a nightmare that was so bad I cannot even begin to tell you guys. And that's something I must never forget as I stand up here tonight. I have to remember the pain, not the fun, I can tell you. And the day came for me to the hospital, told me, they said, Karen, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue and husbands, bad checks, drunk driving charges, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything that you do in Nebraska is in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you're either going to a treatment center or you no longer have this job. And you know, you guys, you don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved more than anything in the whole world. And I cannot say that enough tonight. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Nebraska. And what I'm about ready to tell you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from any AA podium. I found myself stealing drugs from that nursing home. I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium, anything I could get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly mistaken. And the day came for me, the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You're just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange, too, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange, too. And I threw my narcotic keys at them, and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And it's a fine, fine facility, you guys. And I was drunk on that interview, and I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin yang, let me tell you. I had to drink. I had to take drugs. I had no more choice in any of it. And when it gets to be like that, I can tell you that the fun was all over with me. It was something I had to do. And I hated myself so bad, I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I kept that job for about 6 months, doing the same thing as I was doing at that nursing home, justifying in my head, I don't mean to do this. I'm not a bad person. This is a temporary thing. This is the last time I'm ever going to do it. And we all know that that never happens for us. We just jump from the fat to the fire here. And the day came for me when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from that hospital. And this has got to be the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotic keys and you get the hell out of this hospital and don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done it too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story short for me here tonight, you guys, I lost my nursing license. I threw the one thing that I loved more than anything in the whole world right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is alcoholism at its finest, I got to tell you. And to make a long story even shorter for me here tonight, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I have traveled all over the Midwest. I prostituted myself. And I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me that I'm still a very ill person to be thinking that kind of crap, you know. I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions, I've been chained down, I've been strapped down. I can't think of a thing that happened to me out in those streets as a practicing female alcoholic. And I hated myself so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And 2 years went by for me. And there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I got to tell you guys. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live. and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed down the streets is what happened to me. But before that happened, I remember thinking to myself, 2 years ago I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel, which was adjacent to that Skid Row area, and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I'd rather imagine those people felt the same way when they arrived there. And like I said, I can't tell you much about it all. I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital that I was born at, the very hospital that I worked at for 19 years, and I can tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds the day I got sober, and I was coming off a quarter whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day, and that is a lot of booze, that is a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying to do, I got to tell you. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over within 3 days, and maybe it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time before I was going to start feeling better. I was laying in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going, and I just wanted to die is what I wanted to do. And obviously, I couldn't even do that right. And I don't know how many people in this room tonight have been through withdrawal, but I can tell you it is not a pleasant experience. Every time I think about drinking, the hair on my neck really stands up. It makes me sick even thinking about it. And program is practically guaranteed for me. I'll never have to go through it again. But, you know, I used to scream at those nurses and say, you get me some Librium, you get me some Valium, you get me something. This is absolutely inhumane that anybody should have to go through this kind of withdrawal. And let me tell you what these people told me. They said, Karen, you need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. I went to a fine, fine facility, you guys. They knew exactly what they were doing with alcoholics. And they went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. And you need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. I went to a fine, fine facility. Like I said, they knew exactly what they were doing. But let me tell you what these people did for me. And I will be forever grateful as long as I am sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got about 10 people from AA to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. I had somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous with me at all times. It was your original 12-step call, let me tell you. And I grew to love these people very, very much. And I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life the day I got sober. And my family wasn't buying it this time either. They'd been through it too many times. They were not going to go through it again. My mother had to be hospitalized because of me and put on tranquilizers. And I have not forgotten that by a long shot as I stand up here tonight. My mom did not deserve that, you guys. And they wanted nothing to do with me, period. But apparently the people in Alcoholics Anonymous did. And I grew to love these people very, very much. And they would sit with me by the hour and they would say things to me like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all you got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date. And they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked into that official treatment program at that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a good one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous there, and that is the ultimate goal of any good treatment center. And let me tell you guys what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I turned on you like you cannot even believe when you started telling me what to do. I needed you so desperately on day one, but 30 days later was a whole different ballgame. And I walked into group therapy for the first time. If you've been in this room tonight, spent through group therapy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I was absolutely terrified, but I wasn't going to let these people know about it, let me tell you. And there was 14 men in that group. They were all younger than I was and stuff, in there for drunk driving charges and stuff like that. I couldn't relate to where these guys were coming from. I had done those things years prior to my alcoholism. And this one guy looked at me, and he said, you think you're better than everybody else here, don't you? And I made a comment to this guy that I was to pay for a long, long time in that treatment center. I said, yeah, you asshole, and you can put your name at the top of the list. You know, I was an inpatient 30-day program for 7 months, you guys, and that is a long time to be an inpatient 30-day program. And I completed that program, and I went to an outpatient program. I went to an evening care program. I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing it for me. I was doing it for the court system by this time. That judge told me, he said, little girl, you better listen to me. You better listen to me real good. You're about $58,000 in debt here. You got about $3,000 worth of bad checks to pick up. You got about 6 warrants out for your arrest. And you leave that treatment center, you're on your way to York Prison for Women. And if there's any doubt in your mind that I don't mean that, that, just try me. And there was no doubt in my mind that he didn't mean it, and I stayed in that treatment center. But I made those people's lives miserable in that place, and I'm not proud of it as I stand up here tonight. I went through many, many counselors in that place, and tonight as I stand here, I'm truly grateful that they did not kick me out, because I would be dead, I can assure you. And anyway, I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way that you teach people in AA to do it. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book and you don't need a sponsor. We do whatever the hell we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And you know, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand up here tonight. But I got to tell you, in 1982, I could have cared less one way or the other what these people thought. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. And you know, you can pull your crap just for so long around here, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. And that's exactly what happened to me, and thank God that's what happened to me. The meaner the old-timers are, the more I love them, because they save people's lives by being like that. And this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me out of an AA meeting one day, and he said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't need to read the book and they don't need a sponsor. He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy, and you're going to go up and ask this man to sponsor you. That's what you're going to do. And I looked at this, and he told me, he said, this guy's a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I'd heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. I told this old-timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. For the old-timers here tonight, I paid that money back too, by the way. And I can tell you guys that from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life. And my life has never been the same since that talk, because let me tell you why. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I knew what was wrong with me, and I knew what I needed to do about it. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in Karen Garrison's life. I never would have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. And I found myself walking across that room and asking Clancy to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being, you know. And I thought to myself, why did he say that to me? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact that this old timer had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked him if he brought me up if he would talk to me. And he said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I was standing there, my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap, I gotta tell you, right through my crap, thank God. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on long distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you're probably going to go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day till I tell you not to call me every day. If you think it costs too much money to call from Lincoln to LA, then you better get two jobs, because that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to sponsor people, you're going to become an active valve, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're not going to argue with me, you're not going to defend your actions to me, and you're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day that my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous began. And I said two words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. And I'll guarantee you that I say it today, too. You know, respect's got to start for me somewhere. It might as well start with my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way there. And I wound up by sponsoring 56 women in that town. And I'm not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love these women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women are still sober today. It's not because of me. It's because they're active Bible members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the first directions Clancy gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell this man, I cannot go through that kind of humiliation. And he said, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. And he said, get up to the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and you tell those people that you have been sober in AA for 2 years that you would like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. Excuse me. And you guys, I know it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's the most important thing I can say from this podium tonight. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went up to the State Board of Nursing, and I asked them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I got to tell you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you want to know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And I got to tell you that one of the happiest days of my life occurred about 7 years ago, when one more time I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and what they told me literally brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. What they said to me was, welcome home, you're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And I can tell you guys that that is a gift from me. No. I had absolutely nothing to do with it, I can assure you. You did that for me, I got to tell you guys. And you know, I got to tell you, at that point in my sobriety, I absolutely fell head over heels with Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I told Clancy on the phone one day, I want to move to Southern California. I want to be on the Pacific Group. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I want to be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want to live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd fit in like a glove, and I'd not been wrong about that either. And every single one of those things have come true for me. And those were all gifts from AA. You know, one of the first things Clancy taught me, you guys, is a couple things I want to share here tonight that are so precious to me and have meant so much to me in my sobriety. And I love to share them with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the first things he told me, he said, Karen, where are you at with your spiritual program? And I said, Clancy, I don't have a spiritual program. What is this, some kind of a joke? I don't believe in God. I can't do that kind of stuff. And he flipped open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he showed me where it says, I get a daily reprieve contingent on a spiritual maintenance with a power greater than myself. And he went on to tell me, there's going to come a day in your sobriety when I can't help you, AA can't help you, and you had better have a God in your life or you're going to be dead from the disease of alcoholism. And I believe that as I stand up here tonight, you guys, because it's happened to me many, many times in my sobriety. And I said to my sponsor one more time, what do you want me to do? And he said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning and get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. You don't pray for things, you pray for God's will, and maybe one of these days something will happen for you. And I did that for 2 years in a row. This is when I still lived in Nebraska, you guys. And I didn't feel any connection with God. I felt like a fool doing it, if you want to know the truth. And I would tell Clancy on the phone, this isn't working for me. I don't feel any connection with God. And he said, are you staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, well, you know that I am. And he said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And in 1985, I found myself in Montreal, Canada, at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you haven't experienced a World Conference in AA, you're about ready to see this all over again in 1995 in San Diego, California. And we're expecting 100,000 people at that conference, and I hope that all of you get to come. It's an experience that none of us should ever miss. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting, and there was 56,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. And my sponsor was down that football field, and they were practicing for a flag ceremony. And they had alcoholics from all over the world carrying their national flags. And I know this all sounds real corny to the new people, but the longer I stay sober, the cornier I get for some reason. And I ran down to tell my sponsor hi. He introduced me to people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed today when I meet people from all over the world in AA. And I ran back up and joined my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this. As long as I live, I'll never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 56,000 sober people go absolutely crazy. And I looked around myself, and I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, and all the new people, and all the people in between. And they all seemed to be loving this program so much. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel what these people are feeling? I, too, wanted to love Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys, and I just could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my life, I got tears in my eyes that I did not try and stop. And for the first time, with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me love this program as much as these people do. And I can tell you guys that for one solid second, my world stopped. And I remember that woman who was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, who literally could not get sober, who literally could not quit drinking. And there she was, 2.5 years sober. And I can tell you that in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage that we see when we're ready to see and we hear when we're ready to hear. And the actions my sponsor taught me got me there. You know, you guys, I work in surgery at UCLA. I have a magnificent job, but it's just a damn job is all it is. My sponsor has taught me that God and AA have to be center core of my very existence. Not some man, not some job, nothing. It's God and AA. Everything else revolves around that. And I believe that as I stand up here tonight. And my sponsor's also taught me to do what's in front of me and not debate it. Just do what God gives you to do, for Christ's sakes. And you know, we had a terrible nursing crisis in Southern California about 3 years ago, and I love to share this story with you guys. I really do. And we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to complain about it, I'm sorry to say. And I'd worked 72 hours this one particular week. And, you know, we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And I had the night off that night. I worked the night shift at UCLA. And I went to a meeting earlier in the evening. I went home and I went to bed early. And the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. It was my boss. And my boss is from West Germany. And she makes Clancy look like a pussycat, I got to tell you. This woman's probably the best nurse I've ever met before in my life, and one of these days when I grow up, I want to be just like her. And she told me, she said, Karen, I know that you're off tonight. I know that you're not on call. I know you work 72 hours this week. I've got 18 people sick over here tonight. I need your help. We're going to do a liver transplant on a little girl that's about 3 years old. I have nobody to do it. Now come to work. And she didn't even give me time to say anything. She just hung up on me is what she did. And I was going to call my sponsor, but I don't want to talk to Clancy about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I just went to work. And I know what he had told me anyway. Do what's in front of you. Do what's in front of you. And that was in front of me. It was clearly in front of me. And I'm so glad that I went to work that night. And I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to get our little patient, and he brought this little girl down to surgery. And we had a jet coming in from the East Coast with a liver for this child, and we had some time to kill and stuff. And he told me, he said, Karen, come out front and get your patient. He said, you're not going to believe all the people that are with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice if they have the support. I was just a bitch is what I was. And I went out front to get my little patient, and the first thing I noticed was there was probably about 70 people with this family, and I could not believe this. At 4 o'clock in the morning, it was highly unusual, let me tell you. And they were being of tremendous support to this family. It was easy for me to see that. And the first thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I have ever seen before in my life. And the father was good looking and stuff. And you guys, I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level that I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And I looked into the most beautiful blue eyes I have ever seen before in my life. And this little girl was so sick. She was so sick she couldn't even lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick and dying from some strange liver disease. And I remember thinking to myself, and you didn't want to be here, Karen. You didn't want to be here. And in her arms, she had a little bear. And she had a blanket wrapped around that bear. And she was hanging on that bear for dear life, I got to tell you guys. And I went over and talked to her. And I said, oh, you brought your little bear down to surgery. And she tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear, you know. But anyway, that family was an absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And we sent them out to the waiting room. And I took my little girl back to surgery. And she looked at me. And she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand it when my mommy cries. And it was a highly emotional thing for me. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and what I have been taught in this program, I was able to tell this little girl the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so much. And she said, go tell my mommy not to cry. And we couldn't do that and stuff. And we put that little girl to surgery, took her to surgery. We took that little girl, put that little girl to sleep. And I got to tell you guys that liver transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss and things. I have never seen an operating room team full of people pull together like we pulled together for that baby that night. And 16, 18 hours later in 90 units of blood, we took that little girl up to her room. And she didn't have much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And I became obsessed with this little baby girl, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule at UCLA. You may not get involved with these transplants transplant patients because they want to know where the organs come from, and we can't tell them, and it's best not to see them after surgery. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room tonight that I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And I thought to myself, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing, and I'm not going to talk to anybody. And when she was 6 days post-op from that 16-hour liver transplant, I went up to her room. And I opened the door to that child's room. And you guys, I could not believe what was in front of my face. My God, the power of God. The power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd been up since her surgery. And she was jumping up and down in her crib. She had her diapers hanging around her knees. She had that bear in one arm. She had put band-aids all over this bear. He had band-aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And the other arm, she had a baby bottle. She was sucking on a baby bottle. Like I said, it was the first time she'd been up since her surgery. And that whole room full of people were in that room. And they all looked at me really, really funny. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, wasn't getting on this kid's dresser. Now, if you think I'm going to stay out of that room, you're just crazier than hell. I didn't care if I got fired. And I was in that room like a flash. And I said to the mother, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a member of AA, and so is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 70 people, you guys, had driven 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the LA area. And I was impressed, let me tell you. And I asked the mother, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. And I thought, oh, wow, our little girl up for the first time. What a hell of a birthday present that was. And I walked over to the little girl. And she handed me her little bear, you guys. And she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. And I have my surgery stuff on. It scared the hell out of her is what it did. If I'd known I was going in the room, I certainly would have changed clothes and stuff. And I told the mother, I said, I can't take that child's bear home. My God, that bear went through this kid's liver transplant. You really need to keep it as a memento. And she said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear. But I got to tell you that that bear is my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And nobody can touch me ever. I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say. And I thought to myself, I need to reciprocate here. I obviously was not prepared for a birthday party. And I remembered something that was in my pocket that my sponsor had given me when I was 5 years sober. And it was a medallion for 5 years of sobriety. I was 7 years sober when this happened. And I held on to that medallion for 2 years too long. You know, we say in Alcoholics Anonymous that you've got to give it away to keep it. You've got to give it away. And I knew I had found the person to give my 5 years medallion to from Clancy. And I went over and gave her my medallion. And I told her the history of that medallion. And she said, oh, Karen, I can't take that. Clancy gave you that. Please keep it. I said, no, no, I want you to have it. And I really did mean that, you guys. I wanted that woman to have my medallion. That is what you have done for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother, and we celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. It has got to be the most magnificent day of my entire life. And I'll never forget those people as long as I live. There's been no more contact. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know that that little girl is doing very, very well, and now she's 7 years old, and her and her brand new liver are doing very well because I know because I check up on her periodically at UCLA. It was just truly wonderful. And I could have missed all that. I could have missed all that by not doing what was in front of me, I can tell you. And I love this program so intensely. I cannot begin to tell you guys. And people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them, so that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, that I may forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked with me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately tonight as I needed you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection. And that is this. That I love you more than anything in the whole world. And it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell that I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing and I'm going to sit down here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand tonight in Flagstaff, Arizona. And I think that but for the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. If you're new in this room tonight, I don't sell to you. I give to you the program that saved my life. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.